We are the EV Cafe and we are at the Commercial Vehicle Show because we are on the road to net zero. Let's see what's happening. Let's go for a spin! In the village today, we have RightCharge, PLP, Spirii, Field Dynamics, Plug Me In, Iveco, Webfleet, Vital EV, Drax, Munro, Compleo, Power,
and Europcar.
It's packed down there. Maybe you try it.
We're at the CV Show 2024, so the EV Cafe brings together as many people as possible from the B2B community to just spread that message that accelerating to net zero isn't as hard as it looks when you go EV.
We all recognise that the only way any of our businesses are going to succeed is if we collaborate, if we work together, if we have fun doing it. It's a really great vibe.
We've come to the Commercial Vehicle Show because the commercial sector is probably the most important thing for us.
Nice to see the delay in the car parks being back to full and getting some footfall on our stand as well.
Well, my personal highlight is seeing exciting vehicles like the Munro truck, which is right next to the Vital EV stand.
Who would I like to see driving the vehicle? Probably someone like King Charles around the Balmoral Estate. That would be really cool.
Built this van especially for the show, which is behind me, and that's all about showing that you can plug equipment into the vehicle and run tools and equipment, televisions, charge mobile phones.
It's great to see, you know, what's out there in terms of
cars,
just the amount of energy in the room, the amount of people coming over,
vans,
the latest technology,
commercial fleets,
and telling people about our new product,
people who understand the world of electric and people who don't.
I actually can't believe it. So 3 years ago this was not this big, trust me. Today they're queuing back to the roundabout to get in, and that's a sign of where we are in the industry.
Thank you for joining us at the Commercial Vehicle Show as part of our On Tour in 24 season.
May have coffee? Yes.
Hello everyone and welcome to the EV Cafe. I'm Johnny Berry, your host, and in my day job I work for Nubuna Vehicle Solutions. I am thrilled to join you live today as we tackle a very crucial topic: charging in all its forms and how software helps maximize its effectiveness and efficiency. Charging is the backbone of any successful electrification strategy, and if we don't get charging right, we're limited before we can even start. However, with the right hardware, implementation, software, we can not only get it right, but also enhance fleet operations. Today, we'll provide you with insights you need to make in order for you to make informed choices about integrating software and charging solutions for your commercial fleets. So joining us today from the EV Cafe team, you already know them and they're experts in their respective fields. Three of them are wearing blue t-shirts, one's in the back of the van and one's in a remote office. Hi, Paul. I'll start with Paul from EV Essentials, ready to share his insights on how electric vans and software solutions are transforming commercial fleet operations. Then I go to Sarah Sloman from Payfrew, distinguished for her expertise in evolving payment technologies that facilitate easier and more effective EV adoption. John Curtis, dedicated to channeling your questions into our discussion, bridging audience curiosity with expert insights. And finally, Sam Clark, I'm going to be nice this time. bringing us the latest developments in public infrastructure, all the way from electric cars, vans, and trucks. And of course, we're also delighted to welcome our guest speakers today, whose vast experience in commercial vehicle sector, charging, software, data, promises to enrich our conversation with invaluable perspectives. We've covered all angles with these guests. But before we proceed, I'd like to express our heartfelt thanks to our gold sponsors. And they are the AA, Europcar, Iveco, Payfrew, Webfleet, and Zaptec. Your unwavering support is crucial in sparking these very, very vital conversations. As always, if you have any questions or would like to contribute, please feel free to join us via the Zoom link posted on the EV Cafe LinkedIn page. And I think Sarah's going to get straight into the chat box and make sure it's there as well, if you aren't already. But before we get on with the show, I know Paul has something burning to get off his chest about an EV Cafe, about an event that the EV Cafe will be attending in only a couple of months' time. Can you tell us a bit more about that, Paul?
Of course I can. It will be very exciting to do that from the back of my van. Yes, indeed. We're here. I'm here doing some work for another one of my clients, and it's very exciting. But what is immensely exciting is CarFest. So I know, yeah, I said car and exciting in the same sentence. But the reality is we get an opportunity to get out of the church of EV, the church of electrification, and go and talk to the great British public about the transition to electric vehicles. So Carfest, as many of you may know, is that event in the south of England, Laverstock Farm, with Chris Evans as its sort of pioneer and leader, raising significant millions for charities, over 25 million raised so far, an event with music and lots of other events. And we, as the EV Cafe and the EV Cafe Village, get to be right smack bang in the middle of 100,000 visitors over those 3 days and talk to them with a 200-seater auditorium about all of the fabulous things that are going on in our industry, in the ecosystem of EV, and help people make informed decisions. And so you get the chance to partner with us and come and exhibit and come and play a part in those panel sessions, really helping educate the great British public on why it's not scary to go EV and why it makes a lot of sense to electrify your life. Yes, people, that's it. Electrify your life.
Fantastic pitch, especially the back of the van. JC, what are you excited about most of an event like the Carfest?
Oh, it's always the people. I just... Hug Central, seeing people again, because you know, living in Scotland, I don't see many people genuinely from our industry. It's one of those where you see people that you know, and it gives you that sense of we aren't all on our own, and we're together, we're a community, we can make stuff happen. But you also meet some really interesting and, let's be honest, a bit odd people who sometimes bring the most remarkable things that they're doing. It's just, oh, I love being out on the road and doing events with you guys. It's just the best.
I know what I'm looking forward to the most is seeing Sam Clark sleep in a tent for the 2 days over there.
Not going to happen.
Sarah, why is it important for the EV Cafe to be an event like the Carfest?
Yeah, I think we were all sort of at first going, what event can we do that kind of ticks all of our boxes? Bear in mind the ESG element that we strive for so greatly as co-directors. This event kicks back a lot to charity. But why I was particularly interested in it is it's, one, going to be quite fun. I've looked at the map. We were grateful to see all the events happening. And also some self-confessed petrol heads will be there celebrating their side of the automotive industry. People like Chris Evans, who is famed for his love of cars. And I just think if we can tap into that high profile attendee who understands where they are now with their classic cars, and that's fine, I feel like that's fine. But what about those commuter cars that they probably don't need to have as petrol or diesel equivalents? Go EV, see how fun and easy EV can be. And I just hope that we get to make a big noise and go for a spin, as John Curtis says on that video that I love so much.
Yeah, I think it's a key point you mentioned there. I think just getting outside the church walls, but not only that, not like Sam Clark going to Nigel Farage's studio, but being able to do that in a fun environment and really helping people and they're asking those all important questions or misinformation around EV. So without further ado, let's get on with the show. And as always, I like to kick it off with some questions to the team. And I ask the team, they keep within 40 seconds. So it's suitable for short form content for YouTube. So, Paul, I'll come back to you, if you don't mind.
40 seconds and Paul, you got 40 no chance.
Not a chance.
I got a stopwatch. I'm going to do it. Do you want me to shout?
And I'm
going to
ask the most broadest of broad questions as well. Paul, as someone who focuses on commercial fleets, how can software solutions optimize fleet operations, particularly when it comes to managing charging logistics and maximizing vehicle uptime?
I think there's two sides to this, and software is important, but of course the charging and the design of the hub and all of that kind of stuff. And I'm not going to tell you any details about where I am, but it is a very cool spot, and it is all designed for commercial vehicles, from the bay size to the power that's here, but also the back office that's deployed with this particular site. It's commercial focus is brilliant, but the software is where it will happen. The transaction, the bookability, all of those elements that need to come into commercial operations, because there's things that you can't have. And that is failure when you come to pay and failure when you, you know, that downtime or of lack of productivity. So it's all about kind of the support that the site gets, but also the software in the background kind of highlighting when there's a challenge. That's the key. How did I do?
Failed miserably.
Ah, man.
You have to put my editing skills there to test now, aren't you?
How many words can you get into a minute? Good grief.
So good.
I listened to a comment made by a fleet director of a mega fleet at the Move introduction this morning. And he's made this comment a few times, is that they can afford the electricity costs, albeit on the public network. They just can't afford the downtime. So exactly what you're just saying there, Paul. So, John, it's your turn.
Oh, Lord.
Okay.
Right.
Never knowingly kept to a schedule.
I reckon John's going to do it. John, from a hearts and minds perspective, what are the main concerns our audience has about transitioning to electric fleets? And how can software help address these concerns to foster a smoother transition?
We've still got the same myths that kick around our industry. It doesn't matter whether you're a fleet driver, a consumer. The first time you get into an electric vehicle, it's all alien. Don't know how to do it. I'm not skilled enough, or I just want to break this thing. And the reality is that software can help identify how people are driving the vehicles, where they're going, how they're doing their routes, and provide more efficiency and a better driving experience. And having the right software to identify charger behavior, to identify driving behavior, and to give a driver support is a really good way of helping them become part of a community. And what we find is that once you drive a vehicle for work, that often then translates into you making better decisions for home. So ultimately, just give these things a try. What's the worst that can happen? You enjoy yourself?
How do we do? Oh, you've been
only four
though.
Seconds better. 4 seconds better.
But it did include the question.
This makes me so nervous. They both have to include the question.
John's in the lead.
Will be. Yeah, you're doing well. Well done.
John is in the lead.
It might be my turn next.
Sarah, you're up next.
Oh gosh. Okay. Well, I'll be fair as always.
No.
I'll
you're
do
not
it on the screen.
Not a chance.
Go on, no
John. You do it.
Right. Right.
I'll make sure my question is really, really long as well.
Okay. Ready to go,
Sarah. Payment solutions are evolving rapidly. How are these advancements making it easier for commercial fleet drivers to access charging infrastructure? And what role does software play in this evolution?
Thank you for asking that question, Johnny. Ultimately, software and payments are vastly overlooked. It's an area of our industry that doesn't get enough attention, which is why we're doing an event like this today. If you understand where you're spending your money, how much it's costing you to spend your money, more on that later, and how best to optimize your fleet to make sure that you're getting the best pence per mile, then you'll be in a winning position for managing your fleet as you go forward and transition from internal combustion engine to EV. 36 seconds, whatever.
What have you got, John? 37. You're in the lead, Sarah. You're in the lead.
But I think she undercooked it, and I think that just rules you out. If you don't get to 40 seconds, binned.
Yeah. Sam, you've got to beat 37 seconds, all right?
Go on, then.
Sam's got notes, by the way. Sam has notes.
Sarah, are you timing, Sam?
Oh, no, I forgot. Hang on. Sorry. I thought I'd been fired. All right, I'm doing it. Ready? Go.
Sam, what have you done in this EV industry? That's a joke.
That'll take more than 40 seconds.
Get that in under 40 seconds. That's
20 years ago, I did this.
Go.
How many events have you been to, Sam? Right, focus. Sam, public infrastructure is a critical component of the EV ecosystem. Can you share how current developments in public charging infrastructure are supporting the needs of commercial fleets and what role software plays in integrating these solutions?
Yeah, it's really important. How did I do? Timing? I think listening to the other guys say, my only comments are that software and charging are the same thing. They are intertwined now. There is no difference. You can't have one without the other. As Paul mentioned, dynamic reservation bookability, incredibly complex but required. Smart charging, dynamic pricing, especially in the commercial world and in the public domain. So it's a complex beast, and there's an awful lot of different facets to it. But the two are inevitably intertwined, in my opinion.
I've got a question for Johnny. And I wonder if he can hit the 40 seconds.
Oh, no. Moving on, it's that time to work with the guest speaker. Go on, John.
Okay, here's the question. With your knowledge...
No, just wind your neck in, Barry. Go on.
Right. With your extensive knowledge of the fleet industry and leasing in particular, what would you say are the most important considerations for a fleet manager when choosing vehicles? Is it the journey cycle? Is it the vehicle? Is it the software? Or is it the charging infrastructure that they use? I think it's really important that you identify these things and rank them in order from one through to four, with no error being included whatsoever. And that's it. 40 seconds, bang on. Well done, mate.
All of the above is important, but I think it's really important when you are choosing your vehicle, looking at the operations of that vehicle and aligning that to the right charging infrastructure, right delivery mechanisms and right vehicle. So that's it.
Ian Thompson worked me out. 40 second question, no answer, job done.
Yeah. Good. Very funny, John. Did you chat GPT it just before, did you?
Cheeky bugger. Let's move on.
No.
Right, anyway, on that note, we better get on with the show. Sam, I know you kicked things off, introduce our first guest speaker. But before you do that, we've got a video to share, haven't we, JC?
We do, mate. Let's have some of this.
It's on.
Oh, is that really on?
Come on, you stop messing about. We've got to get into this conference.
Very wise.
Peter Eldridge, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, yes, we've got the right one. You go that way, I'm going this way.
Ash, hi. I'm so happy you are here because this is an exciting day for us. I am delighted that Allstar are sponsors of the EV Cafe. But why? Why did you do that for us?
We want to get the message out, right, that what we do at Allstar. And EV Cafe was actually probably the first platform that put MENA in the public domain, and Allstar have since acquired MENA, so we want to be part of telling more people that want to get into EVs how Allstar and specifically Allstar Charge Pass can help them.
Yeah, so the Charge Pass does three things, doesn't it? The charging in public, reconciliation at home, and just general refueling. And Allstar is such a trusted household name. And that transition from wet fuel through to essentially electrons is so much easier when someone trusts and believes in the brand already.
Mm-hmm. If you're a fleet, if you're a business, big or small, right, we're on a journey. Most people are coming from fuel, typical traditional fuel, diesel, petrol, moving through to EV, and there isn't a one-size-fits-all.
Yeah, so, making it as simple as possible for the driver.
Huge card, yeah.
Is that actually through the letterbox?
So this goes in your wallet, this nice little card. So this is the Allstar Charge Pass, the newly rebranded card. Oh, cool. So this card does everything you need.
So Ash, we're out in the wild west of charging. Why are we here?
Well, we're here to talk about our new, bigger, better network. So we've added Tesla to the Allstar network. That is an exclusive partnership right now. So we've launched ChargePlace Scotland that some people are aware of.
Wow.
So that's 51,000 chargers now, 19,000 locations. So as we stand here today, we are the biggest and the fastest network available to businesses.
And what do you mean by fastest exactly?
We have the largest number of rapid and ultra rapid chargers available on a single card.
Brilliant. So that and is this the single card?
This is the single card.
So I can use this on any of your
absolutely. Yeah. Wow. Any of our network chargers, you tap this card and away you go.
That's it. I'm off to give this a go before we head back to the AFP conference. Wow, Saz, that has been absolutely brilliant.
I know, just such a good opportunity to learn about how they're making this super simple to enable the transition. 51,000 chargers to date on the network. Everything's simplistic and streamlined in terms of the processing and the invoicing and the use of the card.
Yeah.
I think they thought of everything.
Taking away a critical pain point for the industry.
Good
brilliant.
Point. Nice. Thanks for having us.
See ya.
Can quit your day job, Paul.
I had no idea.
Not sure what you mean by that, Mr. Berry.
It's very enjoyable. Thanks, we actually, for tolerating
we
us.
We think we might have ended somebody's charge when we used that card. That's why we went, oh, gosh, oh, quick run.
Maybe you paid for it.
You're all right. You wouldn't have done that.
Okay, good.
All right, shall I do the intro, Johnny?
Yes.
No prize, he hardly gets a guest speaker.
Exactly. He hardly needs an introduction, this man. A, because we know him so well, and B, because we've just seen him. But Mr. Tate, Ashley Tate, are you already on screen? Excellent. Ash was the co-founder and CEO of Mina. We've all heard of that, a company which revolutionized the way fleets charge their EVs at home. Having been acquired by Allstar in 2023, he now heads up EV at Allstar. Now, fun fact, and I like this, and I'm trying to get my head around it. You own, Ash, 10, and this is your words, not mine, 10 pet sheep. So it's not like you've got 10 sheep. You've said you've got 10 pet sheep, which make me think like people have pet cats. So I just wanted, more than ever, more than anything, what's that about? Please tell me.
Well, it's a long story, but... The short story is a mate of mine was at a wedding, sat next to a farmer, and he said, oh, a mate of mine's got a field. And 2 weeks later, 10 sheep turned up. So that was 4 years ago, and they're just my little pet sheep. So
they have names.
Some of them do. Yeah, my daughter's named a few of them, but I couldn't tell you. There's the white one.
I'm the fluffy white one.
I think, Ash, you try to count them but just fall asleep before you get to the end, so not sure if you've got 10.
Oh, very good, very good.
Matthew McMullen worries me when he says he only likes the pretty ones.
That's very wise.
Okay. Move on quickly before we descend. Yeah.
Welcome, Ash. Now, it's just occurred to me on the basis of your background that it might be worth just explaining Mina, Allstar, maybe even Plug Surfing, and Corpay, and how it all fits together, because you obviously got a different name behind you, but that's the main overarching parent company, if I'm understanding correctly. So it might be just worth explaining that so people can understand what all these logos mean.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think most people in the UK, you'll have heard of Allstar. So Allstar's parent company is Corpay, which is the name behind me. Corpay also own Plug Surfing, which is a consumer brand which some of you may have used to cover Europe, but my remit, if you like, or my focus is around Allstar. So Allstar is all around helping businesses pay for fuel. As most people have known, they've done that for years, and now EV charging. Mina, which the brand no longer exists, but the tech exists. So I was one of the team that built Mina. Mina's all around helping fleets charge their vehicles, or their helping fleets and their drivers to charge their vehicles at home, and ensuring the fleet can pay for that electricity while at home. But the charge pass card that me and Paul were lugging around a few weeks ago, that's essentially what enables everything. So charge pass for fuel, charge pass for EV, charge pass for EV charging at home. Sad. I don't know whether that makes it more complicated or more simple, but essentially, the business, just worry about Allstar. Don't worry about Corpay.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things. And actually, a lot of the topic of today's conversation around software is that there's an awful lot of complexity in order to try and make it simple, right? And sometimes it's quite difficult to explain how complex things are in order to create a simple solution, which means you've got one card for everything. But Ash, in particular, the domestic bit, I'm personally, business, and generally curious about how that works within, I suspect it's very similar to the Mina platform that was already in existence and still is in the background, but how does that bit work in terms of fleets and ability to be able to charge using that card at home?
Yeah, so I guess scenario is you have an electric vehicle. If you can charge at home, off-road, that's going to be the cheapest. It's going to be the most convenient. It means you as an EV driver working for your business can get up in the morning with hopefully a full battery. But the challenge is that electricity is going to end up being billed to you as the homeowner through your electricity bill. And it's quite difficult to then expense it, because your home electricity bill is not itemized. It will not tell you this is the cost of your EV and this is the cost of your fridge. So what we do is we connect to the charger, we connect to the energy supplier, and we ensure that your business, your employer, is billed, invoiced directly for the cost of that electricity, so that when you as a driver receive your electricity bill from whoever your supplier is, the cost of that electricity is already paid for, already taken care of. So it's like, just imagine it just like another charge point in public. Some of the charge points now you can physically tap the card to initiate that business charge. It just becomes like a fuel station on your own driveway, and operates in the same way a fuel card would, in that the cost of that electricity is then billed to your employer or to your to the business. Hopefully that makes sense.
It does. There's a lot more detail coming up as well, Ash. We were so grateful that you came onto the EV Cafe webinar today, but with the podcast that's in the bank and ready to be rolled out in a couple of weeks, we delve right into the background of what it takes to be a visionary and entrepreneur and somebody who can facilitate that takeover of what's an excellent software solution and now has become a sort of all-encompassing payment solution as well. And we talk at length about how this makes it easier for fleets, because they simply don't have to think. You have, with 51,000 connectors, there's only 60,000 in the whole country. So there's a high chance that utilizing the All-Star Charge Pass means that when you're out and about, at home and at work, you can sort it out with one single tap. We dared to ask you on the podcast what might be coming in the future, but you'll have to listen in on that to find out. Have we got any questions? Go on. Sorry, John.
Yeah, I was just about to go there. Ian Thompson has asked exactly that question. He's saying, you know, in the future, we should have a system where your vehicle registration number is recognized by the charger. It's connected to your bank account. And this all happens automatically. How will that, I mean, it will clearly have some impacts for you, Ash. What do you see as the future?
Yeah, I think plug and charge is what's been talked about here. And absolutely. I mean, that's really what everyone is, I wouldn't say waiting for, but that changes the way in which, I guess, we authenticate a charge, right? And it happens today on the Tesla network. If you've got a Tesla and you Tesla charge, you plug your car in and essentially, nice. You know, it just charges the card that is connected to that vehicle. And for us, you know, that's a great opportunity, right? Because it eliminates fraud, especially in the business world, where people could, you know, turn up with a card and a different car. We have things to prevent that. But if the car is the method of authentication, nobody's committing any fraud.
Mm. No, the only time that would happen, though, is something that Patreon are really invested in at the moment. Because, of course, with all these types of payment mechanisms, you need a payment service provider, payment compliant institution to handle that payment. So we're being asked all the time, how do you know who's driving the car? So it's great that the car can get charged and has a single point of payment, single point of invoice built in, automatic, fantastic. But what about those fleets that share vehicles? How would that charger and that car differentiate between which driver is driving that day? So there has to be sort of post-pay reconciliation about who had that car that day. And once we've cracked that, it will be completely seamless.
Yeah, and I think some of that has already been thought about today. So even with our integration with Tesla, you can choose. So you can plug your Tesla in. You can have an All-Star card linked, or the Charge Pass card linked to your to the Tesla account. So you can have multiple cards. So you can say, you know, I've plugged in, select my card. You plug in Sarah, select your card. So there is ways already that exist around having multiple, I guess, cards linked to a vehicle.
I'm super excited about this opportunity. If you think about just taking the Tesla example, but other EVs as well, where you have cameras on you all the time, multiple cameras on you all the time. Imagine how far we could go with face recognition, biometric recognition, AI automation, and have that as an API data layer that goes into that payment system. Be insane. So it goes, I think that's Sarah. Is that correct? Yes, it is. Right. Great. Which account would you like to bill to today? Are you driving privately? Which company are you driving for? So bear in mind, a lot of self-employed fleets get into different vehicles. So it's sometimes you even find the fuel card in the whatever it's called, visor, whatever that thing is. So we kind of need the equivalent of that. Is this is your card for today because you are in this vehicle and you are the cost center that we need to know about, yes or no? You know, some kind of biometric analysis is so exciting. It's not even that far away.
We're used to having cameras everywhere.
But, well, but it's interesting because we had this debate at the commercial vehicle show online, not online, on a panel session around the use of cameras and stuff like that. And there is, I think there's still an element of resistance around that kind of level of biometric, which people conceive as intrusive, you know, like a breach of privacy and all of that kind of stuff. I'm all for getting like the conventional stuff nailed, and actually for van users, I think the MENA solution, which is now All-Star, of course, but the one that I knew from MENA was really helpful, because the guys that are using these vehicles are typically the blue collar workers, and you know, perhaps, you know, having to you know, if they happen to have a drive and can charge at home, that's a brilliant solution. But also it's seamless when they go out into the public domain and come to sites like this, which are really focused around commercial vehicles, to be able to charge seamlessly and use that one card, that one process. That's what I love about this, Ash, is that, you know, you're covering all the bases, and for the people that need it most. And yeah, the plug and charge will come and all of that kind of stuff. But I think, you know, helping people migrate to EV today is a really great solution. I know it was core to what you came to market with in the first place, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, the biggest challenge in EV adoption is not the biggest challenge, but one of the biggest challenges, right, in EV adoption, especially within businesses, is how are the companies going to pay to charge the vehicles? And AER, you know, I just don't think it will ever work, right? We're in a place now where it's dropped again. Public charging's gone up, home charging's gone down. AER looks at retail energy or domestic energy. So it's massively disadvantaging those that can only charge in public. So solution like what we do, one of the reasons we created MENA and the tech we did at MENA, and I think one of the reasons All-Star acquired us, was because it's fair, it's accurate, it pays actual cost of charging at home. Combine that with public, you know, it's just everyone's happy. Business is happy, drivers are happy. It will encourage more people to charge at home, where it ultimately saves downtime. We were talking about downtime earlier. Like, the raw cost of electricity is half the price. Add in downtime, you're tripling your savings by moving to charging at home versus in the public.
Yeah, can I just add to that as well, John? And the question that Ian Thompson answers, or we answered in regards to the technology, I just wanted to address that quickly. He said, how far away are we from having chargers that recognize the cars by MAC address or similar? That already exists. That's called auto charge. It's a system that I was using on my own car for GridServe 2 years ago. So that is where you learn the MAC address of all technology, all things connected to the internet have its unique MAC address. So that exists already. And therefore, that's an opportunity to utilize for all existing vehicles that were already out in the domain, as well as the future ones. Plug and charge is more of a certification series process, which is done with the vehicle and the charger and the back end systems that then talk to each other to make that handshake, to make the same thing happen, but it's processed in a different way. And it's a more secure way of doing it. And my second point was just around the biometrics or face ID or even it's something which would appear to be simple, like a vehicle registration recognition system of some sort or another, costs tremendous amounts of money. So it's all well and good going, oh, wouldn't it be nice if we could see everyone's faces, or we can read everyone's registration numbers as they pull in? Brilliant. It's going to cost millions. It will cost a huge amount of money, and that will be passed through and have to go on to more expensive charging infrastructure. So the important thing I just wanted to highlight is that every time we think of a new brilliant piece of tech that will be useful, it's going to cost millions and millions to develop, design and implement, and it needs to be universal across the whole country. So we've got to stick to ideas that work, like plug and charge, that can be universal, can be done digitally, and is accepted across a wider range. So I'm just caveating some of this weird and wonderful stuff to say every time you do that, it's going to cost a fortune and someone's going to have to pay for it. And ultimately, it'll be the end user on public charging that has to do that.
And just I just want to clarify MAC address for people. It's basically like a VIN number for the electric battery management system. Would that be right, Sam?
No.
It's like a VIN number, a chassis number.
No, a MAC address is a unique code which is associated to every piece of electrical equipment. So your phone has a MAC address, your monitor, maybe even your computer. Every single piece of computer technology that connects to the internet has a unique MAC address. So our vehicles of today are computers that connect to the outside world. So they have their unique IDs as well. So it's not a VIN number. No, it's like a unique digital identifier for all electrical technology or components.
Sort of like a VIN number. Yeah.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you very much for that. And couldn't agree more with both your comments, Ashley and Sam, to be honest. More on that later. After all the sheep puns on the chat box and you sharing your knowledge, Ash, it's now time to welcome our next guest speaker. But please do come back later, Ash, for a final round of questions, because it looks like we've got plenty for you.
We do.
And best question wins a mug, or best sheep pun wins a mug. I don't know. That's up to John to decide later.
Either or. Just don't ask me any questions about sheep. I don't know anything about them. I know what they eat.
Well, if there is a joke, if there is a joke for the best sheep joke, Johnny, it ain't going to you. That was absolutely terrible.
They were brilliant.
No, stop.
That is really bad.
Okay, right. Next up, Mr. Webb, Angus Webb, who I've had the pleasure of getting to know quite well in the last week or two, based on various events that we've shared stages with. And it's a joy, Angus, to have you on our show. So, quick intro. Angus is the CEO of Dynamon, helping fleets plan their transition to EV so they can do it right, first time and in a cost-effective manner, with their advanced software called Zero. In his previous career, he worked with Team GB, helping them to win more medals at London 2012. It was this data analytics approach that inspired him to start Dynamon to help fleets minimize their costs. And I love that. That's a very good fun fact, because it's taking technology and learning and massive advancements in sport-related, cycling-related activity and translating it into our merry world. So that I didn't actually know that, Angus. So I appreciate that fact. That's very, very useful. And of course, as always, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Great to be here.
Good stuff. So tell us a little bit about Dynamon for the audience.
Sure. So so Dynamon is a fleet optimization company. We help commercial fleets reduce costs. That's where that was our origin after the work that I did at London 2012. And over the years, we've been sort of helping fleets save fuel, but the real sort of advancement in electrification, it was always on our product roadmap, but a bit later. But the real advancement with electrification during the pandemic meant we accelerated the development of one of our future plan products called Zero. So Zero is a tool that helps fleets plan their electrification. There's so much work that needs to go into planning a commercial fleet from an electric vehicle perspective. And pretty much every fleet's got to go through this process. And it involves quite a lot of data analysis, collecting data, processing that data, and it's a repeated process that's going to be done in every fleet, every single business supplying to fleets, helping them understand the suitability of the EVs they're selling them or the charging they're selling them. That we thought there's not enough data scientists in the world to transition every single fleet to electric vehicles. And so to stop it from being an absolute headache for every fleet, we built a software tool that makes it significantly easier and more precise. And we're using technology, what we call simulation technology. And I've been sort of banging the simulation drum on my own for the last 2 years around taking this technology that Formula One teams use every week to understand the right configuration of the F1 car for the fastest lap time on the weekend. We're taking that and making that available to people in the transport industry. So it takes all the data that a fleet has and can help you understand exactly how EVs will perform on your operation, so you can choose the right EVs, and it understands real world EV performance. So the exact routes that you're doing, the payloads that you're carrying, any like modifications that you might make to the vehicle if it's got refrigeration or tail lifts. All of that stuff is taken into account so you can understand the real world suitability of EVs. And then obviously then the flip side is the infrastructure. So understanding what charging you're going to need to do, what you're going to need to build in your depot, how many charge points, what power of charge points. And then that then impacts grid. Do you need a grid upgrade? How big does the grid upgrade need to be? Is there anything you can do to avoid it? And then power, what's that going to cost? When your fuel bill becomes your electricity bill, what's the cost of that? So there's so much analysis that needs to be done for a commercial fleet. And we're seeing it at the moment. There is this challenge around the adoption has slowed down. And that's because we've got to think about it from the financial director's perspective. They need cold, hard facts. They're not evangelists, unfortunately. Some of them may be, but they just need the cold, hard facts. And it needs to be backed up with evidence. And so we've built that software product that makes that easy. So, we're working with some major logistics companies and transport companies out there to solve that problem. And it's super exciting time. We just want to support that planning phase to make that transition. I mentioned cost effective as well. So if you get it wrong and don't do proper planning, that will cost money. So you'll have disruption. You might buy the wrong kit. You have to buy more kit that you didn't originally plan to buy. And so it's about making that it sort of much less disruptive, but way more cost effective as well.
Angus, can I just clarify something? Do you work on theoretical models only, or do you feed in customer data and then model from that actual data?
So it's both. So the model is simulating something that hasn't happened yet. So you're going to have EVs driving in your operation, and you want to know what will that look like? How will that work? And the good thing about software is you can try things out that will fail and realize that ain't going to work. We're not going to do that. We'll do something different inside software. It costs you very little to do that. But we feed our software with all the data you already have. So we've got a database of EVs inside our software, and we've got all your operational data. So if you've got telematics, it flows easily straight into our software, and you can basically look at what will work and what won't work in your operation. So that's why I use the term simulation, because it's not real yet, but you're able to try lots of different things cheaply, easily inside software.
Understood. Thank you.
But Angus, because I remember, because simulation sounds almost fake, but I know that you've gone to and the nth degree of detail to do this by using, you know, Millbrook or UTAC Proving Ground, and actually using computers to model out so many scenarios that have given you as close to real world data as you could possibly get. Talk to us a little bit about the lengths that you've gone to get this data right.
Yeah, I mean, it's really important that the simulations are accurate. Otherwise, what's the point? We have gone to so much effort to make our simulations very accurate. And so, when we go to Millbrook, we put EVs in very specific situations. We've had EVs on dynos to really understand, are our simulations correct? We also we look at what happens when EVs go into real fleet and back up our models to make sure that when we do it next time, it's more accurate. But also as well, things change in the future. So we want to help a fleet maximize what they're getting from their existing EVs, as well as when they're planning their transition. But without our software, what's the alternative? You've got just trial and error, basically. Trial and error is ultra slow. It's expensive. And what you do in London is going to be super different to what happens in Scotland. Inside our software, you can look at your entire operation from Inverness to London to Swansea and see exactly how EVs will perform and what are the right choices to make, all just for the cost of a software package. So we think it's a hugely important step. And, you know, obviously fleets are not going into EV as quickly as they need to. So they need a helping hand in this first step to know with confidence that it will work for them. And so they can make that purchasing decision. And we've got OEMs coming to us now and leasing companies saying we need help, because we've got the ZEV mandate starting to bite now. So 10% commercial vehicles need to be EV, and customers literally don't know where even 10% of their fleet could go EV, or not 10% of the fleet, but 10% of their purchases this year. That's such a small number of vehicles, and most operations could easily electrify those portions of their operations. They just need the help and the confidence to know that it will work.
Thank you very much, Angus. Sorry, Sam. I know we've all got plenty of questions for you, but we are behind on time. So before we ask them, I would like Sam to introduce our final guest speaker for today. And for you, Angus, I request that you join us again in only a few minutes, the last 10 minutes of the session, alongside Ashley and Paul for a final quick round of questions. Over to you, Sam.
Thank you, Johnny. Yeah, one of my questions for Angus is whether he's really hot in that jacket and he only put it on because it's got his logo on the front.
He is in Scotland, though.
Well, yeah, so we'll find that out later. All right, Paul, sorry. Paul, I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce the first part of your surname, so I'm going to go Paul Barnfather, if that's all right. Paul's background is in energy systems, and he now works for Zaptec, a Norwegian charge point manufacturer. He's been responsible for Zaptec's home charger, the Zaptec Go, and his job there is now EV charging solutions expert. So welcome. That's a good title for this group. Fun fact, Paul is a big EV fan, but unfortunately, and this isn't very good, still rides a stinky old petrol motorbike. And that's not good. That's not good, Paul. There's two of us who own electric motorbikes in this forum, and you're not one of them. So you need
he
to
knows, yeah. He knows.
I know. Sarah's always on at me. It will change.
Yeah, well, now there's two of us, all right? So tough. Noted. But anyway, jokes aside, welcome, Paul, as always. And where is next for EV charging software?
Well, thanks, Sam. I'm going to talk about software from the perspective of the EV charge point. Might not sound very much because you're just looking at the charge point. But I know EV Cafe is normally a PowerPoint-free zone, but I am going to share something with you. So I hope that's okay.
Johnny and I have already vetted this, guys. This is worth looking
it's
at.
It's been vetted.
It's
right,
good,
okay.
Yeah.
So I had a look into what is our software doing, and right now it's talking to nearly 400,000 charge points. This graph shows the number of charge points connecting to our back end over the last 8 years. So 2016 this starts, and when people say the EV transition is slowing down, not from our perspective, it's really difficult to keep up. So I asked our software manager, well, what does this mean? You know, what does this? And he said, well, we get about 4,000 messages every second from our charge points. And we get another 2,000 every second from the charge point operators that are controlling our charge points. So this is about 1 million messages every few minutes. We're only just getting started. So there's a lot of software going on in the background. So I thought I'd talk to you about, well, what's in the charge point? You know, where's this software? What's it doing? Well, the first bit is you probably never even noticed this. There's some safety software in there. You should never see this. This is the stuff that keeps you safe. If something goes wrong with a charge point, stops you getting electric shocks. Super important. Software. So mission critical software running there in the charge point. Next up, there's a bunch of firmware. Some of you might know this, that you update the firmware on the charger. This is the stuff that controls the display, makes it do slightly different things, starts and stops the charging. So there's firmware in the charge point as well. Then there's the stuff in the back office that's listening to the chargers, talking to the charge point operators, and basically controlling the fleet of chargers. That's the stuff that's currently getting about 1 million connections every few minutes. And lastly, there's the stuff that you might see. It's either the app, you know, you get an app with your charger these days, or there might be a website, and you can log into that and see what's going on. All of that is software. So as far as Zaptec's concerned, as well as making the charge point, we have to make all that. And actually, that's almost as big as making the charge points themselves. It's a big operation. As a manufacturer, we're becoming a software company. And this keeps us very busy. So if that's our world, that's it, as far as Zaptec's concerned. Is there anything missing in this picture? give yourself a point if you said car or van, if you're Paul. But at the moment, AC charge points don't really talk to the car. And thankfully, there's finally a new standard out, ISO 15118, which has been mentioned in the chat, which finally allows us to talk to the car. So that is coming. It's still not widespread, but finally the car actually enters the picture. It's a bit late, but there we go. Next up, the power grid. The EVs, when there's a few thousand, power grid doesn't care. When there's millions, they become part of the power system. And turning them up and turning them down in response to the wind and the solar and everything else, that becomes essential to keep the price down. We don't know how we're going to do that yet. The protocols haven't even been fixed. So question marks there, but the grid becomes part of the software. And then finally, there's everything else. My home energy management system, some kind of super tariff thing. I don't know. There's all sorts of stuff you can do, matching it to your solar panel. How are we going to do that? Well, there's a standard out there, OCPP. I know it's acronym-free zone, so Open Charge Point Protocol. Well, but there's new things like Matter, which will be on your phone soon. It's all to come. So right now, we at Zaptec, we're staring this down thinking, we thought we were becoming a software company. We're absolutely going to become a software company. So that's it from point of view of charge point manufacturer. There you go. Charge point software in 5 minutes.
I know. No mean feat. Thank you so much for covering that. And we share an affinity there, because I myself also never knew that I would end up in software, but it's just such an underrepresented, unnoticed, unconsidered part of what is essentially a huge value chain, is what I would call it. This is the way that we unlock the hardware. This is how we get the best from the hardware we've already deployed. It's not even that hard. Those building blocks already exist. A number of the driver problems that we hear about every day exist in the finance sector. So without conversations like this, Paul, and thank you, I'm so glad for you to have that promotion. I feel so secure that you're leading the way with this. And Norwegian companies are always got their finger on the pulse. And I believe you're live from Germany right now. Mm. Where are you?
I am coming at you live from Power to Drive in Germany, which is a huge energy, not just EVs. Back to what we're saying, it's not just the EVs, it's only one little bit of it. It's epic. So I'm glad the broadband connection is holding up, because I am in our office booth and it appears to be working. So that's a big relief. But I'm going to enjoy myself the next few days looking at what's new in Europe. But a lot of solar, a lot of energy, huge amounts going on here on the grid side. So maybe I can report back later on what I've seen.
Thanks, Paul. Before we go on, we just need to introduce Ashley and Angus back onto the webinar, I think, for the final round of questions. And Paul, apologies if I distracted you by any chance. I just learned how to annotate on Zoom. And I resisted the urge to write some silly stuff, but well, didn't want to interrupt your flow. So apologies for that.
Yeah, we've got some good Q&A, haven't we? Let's have a look.
We've got some brilliant ones. Ashley, there's a message from Robin Hughes, and Robin's a friend of ours, usually in Hong Kong. He's currently in the Philippines. And he says some $200 billion is made by Filipino overseas foreign workers to their families back home in the Philippines. International pay processes are usurious in their fee structure. Can we engage? So if you and Robin can hook up, and we can do this outside of this webinar, but you win the mug of the day, Robin, because usurious is a word I had to go and look up. And it's basically unfair, kind of bit dodgy. They're taking more than they should. Usurious. There we go. Thank you for that. But Robin Hughes and Ashley will hook you up so that you can have a chat about payment processing in the Philippines.
You're going to need to send that all the way to Manila. That's going to be an impressive parcel for us. I'd actually, just before you end that, it's so true. There's an amazing technology behind the scenes for payment processing, and it depends where that payment processor is based, and it adds on layers and layers of cost. And there's a huge swathe of the whole globe that is being crucially ignored and doesn't have those payment service providers. That's why the price is higher, and that needs to end.
Question for Angus from Michael Barton in Bristol, just in case you didn't know. Dynamon sounds very, very exciting. Well, they're based in Southampton and you're in Scotland, so it's the two best parts of the country. What is the biggest challenge you face?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, there are obviously lots of challenges in the industry. For us, it's about building a software product that anyone can use, but under the hood, it's doing very complicated work. We want to make planning of transition to EV super easy, but the financial director of all these companies wants to know that the numbers are right. So we do a lot of hard work to make sure that the numbers are very accurate inside our software and the user experience is very easy, to make that transition planning very easy. So we've got 4 or 5 PhDs in physics and software engineers and all sorts of different skills behind the scenes building the product, so that you guys in the fleet industry don't need to hire these people to do the work yourselves. You've got a nice slick tool that makes that transition, possible.
Talking about nice and slick, I thought the answer to your question of what's the most challenging thing would be, which shampoo will you choose? Anyway, thank you for that. Appreciate that. Omar Yassin says, what role will smart charging play with further adoption and managing solar and grid capacity? Paul, smart charging, it has a massive role to play. Can you kind of quantify that for us?
Yeah, I'll try and summarize it. So the smart charging is huge in terms of lowering the cost. You might have noticed that EV charging isn't always as cheap as you'd like it to be. With smart charging, that cost can drop to effectively free at certain times of the day. So if you want to drive down the cost of transport, smart charging is absolutely essential. The alternative, if we don't have smart charging, you often describe electrical networks as like you're having to build a 30-lane highway so that you never get congestion. You can't have congestion on the electricity system, otherwise it switches off. So we build out vast amounts of capacity that's never used. Now, without smart charging, we'll have to build even more, and you see these crazy figures about how much investment is needed. And that's, yeah, if you do it the old way, you'd need that. With smart charging, you can move the peaks away. It lowers the cost for everyone. We don't need that investment to build lines everywhere. So it absolutely has to be part of it. Final thing is, if you've got smart charging, it means that when you've got wind or solar, you can turn the chargers up and down. And that means we get more money for renewables. It increases the value of renewables as well. So what's not to like? You need this.
Brilliant. Thank you for that. Angus, you're back on. Omar Yassin has another question. He asks if your software will allow a plan to be built based on the limitations of EVs rather than trying to fit existing plans into EVs. It's an interesting way of looking at the problem.
Yeah, super good question. Yes, it can do that. Obviously, most businesses don't want to change their operations because their operations are that way because of another reason, another more important reason probably. But of course, things may need to change and you will need to rebuild some elements of your operation to accommodate longer dwell times, perhaps diverting to charging in other locations. One of the super interesting things we're doing with the ZHID consortium, so this is on the heavy goods vehicle side, is sharing of infrastructure amongst depots. So where a maritime transport vehicle might be passing an Eddie Stobart depot with some charging, it may pull in there, take some charge and continue. Now, they're probably not doing that today. So that's going to be modifying routes and optimizing all of that stuff. So yes, our software is designed for that.
There's a question around whether we've reached the tipping point with EVs. And I think this is a general question right the way for everybody. We are moving more and more towards higher sales numbers. And we know that we're reaching a difficult period where we have to push through to get the growth that we all anticipate. But have we reached the tipping point, Paul? You're nodding sagely. Do you think we have in terms of electric cars? Or we know we're some way off with vans and trucks?
I think we're still not quite at tipping point because they're still very expensive.
Other Paul as well.
There's never enough Pauls, Paul.
Never too many either. Gosh. So for cars, you would be, I think, lulled into a false sense of security to think that we had reached the tipping point. The minute the government turns off the benefit in kind incentives, I think we will find that actually those trees won't be getting so many hugs because people will be thinking there's not the financial incentive to do it anymore, which, let's not kid ourselves, that's been the primary driver. I think if you look at the van sector in particular, it's dropping in its market share year on year at the moment. And we need solutions that we're talking about. I'm sat here, and I've got to show you this because I'm literally sat under a wind turbine here, which in a very short order will be connected to some charging over here. And there is, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So look out for press releases on that, because this is the future, direct energy into the grid. And we need these clever solutions to make life easier, to make it more cost effective to charge in the public domain. And we need to educate consistently. We are not at a tipping point. And the minute we take our foot off the gas, we will lose, because there is much, as Sam often refers to, much more money in the oil and gas kind of lobbying kind of route. And we will quickly see things turn around. But the manufacturers are under a lot of pressure and are having to change. The ZEV mandate, the zero emission vehicle mandate, has been called out already today. That is a very clear guidance both on cars and vans, and we're not meeting those numbers, and it doesn't look like we're going to meet them this year, that tells me we're not in the right place.
So many questions in here. I don't think we've got time for them, JB, do we?
No, we don't. We've probably got time to squeeze in one more question if you want to, JC, and then we'll wrap up.
Ian Thompson on the tipping point, he says the Dacia Spring is built in China and the EU tariff hike, that's about 38%, I think, that's being threatened for Europe and could be for the UK. He says that's going to become as expensive as the Renault 5 or Citroen EC3. That's going to have a massive impact, isn't it? Where are we in terms of these tariffs? Ashley, EV tariffs from foreign manufacturers, non-UK manufacturers, is that going to yet again stall an already stalling market?
Oh, this is a complicated question, isn't it, right? Because I think there's so many factors to consider here. You know, the easy answer is just allow imports from everywhere and don't tax them. That'll drive EV adoption. But then what impact does that have on, you know, British manufacturing or Europe, some of the German brands we're seeing? So I just don't, I think it's quite political. And I think there's not a simple answer to this one, unfortunately.
Leo, yeah, it's very complex.
Yeah, if we want to drive cheap EVs to the UK in the short term, I think China is the answer, but I don't think that's the long term solution.
No, I agree. Leo Pickford quite rightly says that's one for debate another time, and I think possibly he's right.
Yes, absolutely. And on that note, that's all the time that we have for today. Please make sure that you join our LinkedIn channel if you're not already. Subscribe so you don't miss out on future events like our podcasts, our EV news on a Friday. And please do check out our other channels too. So YouTube, TikTok, Instagram for more content, because we're enhancing our social media presence across all different channels. And we'd love for you to be part of our growing community. So thanks for tuning in. And we look forward to seeing you next month for the next webinar.
Well done, everyone.
Thanks everybody.
Bye-bye.
Cheers, everyone.
Bye.
Bye, friends, and Sam.
Ha 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 ha